The Knife Sharpener, a short story by Bernie Bernard. "Now tell me again," Janet said. "Now tell me again," Janet said, wrapping the yellow scarf around her daughter's neck. Erin was dark, like her mother, with unruly curly hair framing an open face. She began her sing-song. "Don't dawdle, don't play with the dogs, don't talk to anyone I don't know. Go right to Kathleen's house." Kathleen was the 12-year-old daughter of a friend, and she had agreed to walk Erin to school the first year. "Right," Janet opened the back door. "Off you go. See you at lunch." Mitzi ran up with Daniel in tow. "Kiss and hug," she demanded. "Kiss and hug for me." Daniel threw himself into the huddle, his arms raised and eager. After a minute, Janet broke them up. "Okay, okay, enough." She herded the little ones back into the den. "Play," she said. Erin stood hanging on the doorknob, waiting for her mother's hug. She accepted it like a talisman, safer after. "Love you, Mom. Bye." She hurried down the steps. Janet closed the door. She walked back up through the kitchen, grabbed her cigarettes, and went to the living room window. From there, she could watch Erin march down the driveway and across the street, making her way to the corner where she turned out of sight. The neighbor, the older woman whose children were grown, sometimes watched Erin too. She told Janet that the child walked just like her mother. It was a kind of hurried saunter, a shuffle, anything but graceful. Janet lit her cigarette. Here and there, patches of the road had been worn by traffic to blue-black ice. The smaller kids in the street ran to those patches, sliding as fast and as far as they could, but always later in the morning when the neighborhood traffic had ceased and the street was quiet. For the past few years, Janet and the other mothers had taken informal turns supervising the play and, even when she was not on patrol, pacing and jumping in her parka and mukluks, she watched from the living room window. This year, Erin would not be involved in the games. She was off on her own. Mitzi and Daniel stood with Janet now, their hands pressed against the cold window. Mitzi wrapped her arms around her mother's leg. "Time for toast," she said. Daniel joined in, happy to hear a word he could echo. "Toast," he said. "Toast, toast, toast and jam." "Okay," Janet took a hand in each of her own. "Let's do it." The kids hauled themselves up to their places at the table while Janet dropped some bread into the toaster and eased the handle down to catch. She got the peanut butter and jam out and cleared Erin's cereal and juice away. The kids sat quietly eyeing each other. Any minute some squabble would break out, and then, in another minute, they would be best friends again. It would go on like that all day. She wondered when real long-lasting malice would begin. She'd seen hints of it in Erin. Big hints. The toast popped up. "There it is," Daniel yelled. She made herself a cup of coffee and sat down with them. Erin will be in school by now, she thought. Will be taking off her coat and scarf and boots and sitting down at her desk, ready. When the kids had finished eating, she took them to the TV in the den. They settled down in front of Romper Room, waiting for their instructions from the young woman who would lead them through mid their romps. Janet looked at the woman's perfect face. "You do a fine job," she said. "You're a good broad." She spoke to the backs of the floor on the floor. "I'm going up to shower now. I'll leave the bathroom door open." They ignored her. She hurried upstairs and made the beds. One of her husband's jackets hung on the bedroom door. That meant it needed a button. The button would be in the pocket. She stripped in the hall, tossing her nightie down the chute before going to the bathroom to turn on the water. Then, back to the top of the stairs to listen for any noise other than the voice of Miss whatever her name was on TV. Then, into the shower. She sudsed her hair and groaned into the steamy water. Someday she would stand there for an hour, just stand, steaming, wasting water. Afterwards, downstairs to check the kids, and downstairs again to the wash in the basement. Left, right, white, colored. Left, right, white, colored. She threw the white into the washer, then upstairs to the bananas. They were past eating raw, ready to be made into muffins. She'd do this, check the mail, have another coffee. Then the kids. hold them, tell them there would be muffins. She was mashing the bananas when the back doorbell rang. Oh, go away, she thought. Leave me be. But she went to the door and opened it. It was an old man. Yes, she said. Morning, he tipped an imaginary hat to her. I was wondering if you had any knives that could use sharpening. He was tall, but his shoulders were stooped under the slopy sleeves of a heavy gray curling sweater. It was not zippered, and she could see suspenders. They held up dingy brown draped pants, the kind the young guys were wearing again now, but these were from some former life in the world of fashion. A satchel hung over his shoulder, bulky with something heavy. His face, fleshier than the rest of him, was a sickly ashen color. Her eyes finally settled on his. They were clear and alert under bushy gray eyebrows. Well, he's not a drunk, she thought. Knives? She asked. Maybe you've heard from your neighbors. I come round every March. Do moors as well. He bundled his sweater around his chest, moving his weight from one foot to the other. Come in, Janet said. You're cold. She closed the door behind him. I guess I likely have some that aren't as sharp as they might be. How much do you charge? That's up to you, missus, he said. Janet started toward the kitchen. Come this way. I'll give you the knives. The mower's in the basement. Mitzi and Daniel erupted from their play trance. Hi, Mitzi said. Who are you? Janet shooed them away from the knife sharpener. She led him to the kitchen drawer and handed him the knives, one after another. These, I guess. Downstairs in the basement, she pointed to her husband's workshop. The mower's in there. I'll leave you to it. She watched him look around. He dragged a lawn chair over to the workbench, opened his satchel, and took out his whetstone. Janet went to the washer, emptied the white load into the dryer, threw in the colored, and left him to go upstairs. The kids were busy with Lego. She finished the muffins. Then Mitzi was at her knees. Hi, sweetheart, she said. I'm coming to sit with you. She led her by the hand down into the den. They sat on the floor with Daniel, and he pointed to the abstraction he'd built. Tree, he said. She played with them, letting them roll over and around her like bear cubs. Between squeals, she could hear from the basement the rhythmic scrape of steel against whetstone. She wondered if he could hear the squeals. The timer buzzed. Muffins, she said. The kids ran ahead of her, stopping just short of the stove. She pushed them back so she could open the oven door. They have to cool a bit. She dumped the pans upside down on the counter. Steam rushed up to her face, and a sweet banana smell filled the kitchen. The kids danced around her. In a minute, she said. She put the kettle on for tea. He can likely smell the muffins, she thought. She reached for the cups and got the tray out from behind the spices. Two hands reached up over the counter, and she put a steaming muffin in each. Blow on them, she warned. I'm going downstairs. You eat your muffins with Big Bird. They wandered off, watching their muffins as they carried them. When the tea was ready, she arranged the pot and cups on the tray with a plate of muffins and carried it down to them. He was bent over his work, his knees braced under his thickly muscled arms. He didn't see her until she was right in front of him. He jumped a little. Thought you might like some tea and muffins. She put the tray on the workbench. Don't mind if I do, he said. He set the knife he was working on down beside him on the floor, the whetstone on his lap. This is one fine old house, he said. Don't mind if I do, he said. He set the knife he was working on down beside him on the floor, the whetstone on his lap. This is one fine old house, he said. Tell by the shape of the basement. He waited for her to pour the tea. Yes, she said. It's got some creaks and cracks, but we like it. She leaned against the wall. He took a muffin. What line of work's your husband in? He asked. He's an architect, she answered. That'd be interesting, he nodded. Are you retired from something? Janet asked. I'm guessing this is a sort of hobby. He leaned back to give her room as she poured his tea. Retired from a lot of things, he chuckled. Never been very lucky with a career. He took a sip of tea and added some milk. Had jobs, though. Some good, some not so good. Janet thought about her father. He'd been lucky. He'd made it. All the men in her life had made it, one way or another. I quit regular work when my wife died, he said. She needed money more than I ever did. I'm sorry, Janet offered. Oh, that's all right, he said. We didn't get along anyway. She spent most of her time hanging over a bingo card, anxious for the big win. You did make a good pot of tea, though, like you. I miss a woman pouring my tea. You have children? Janet asked. Two, he said. A young lady took off with the scum of the earth when she was 16, and my boy's over in the North Sea drilling for oil. He don't write much, but I follow the papers to see what's going on over there. His mother used to worry over him, but I don't. He's a hell of a swimmer. If the thing threatened to blow, he'd be the first one off, guaranteed. He broke a muffin open and wiped his mouth with the sleeve of his sweater. Janet saw that the cuff was unraveling, eating away at itself. That would be a good, high-paying job for a young man, she said. He's not so young, he said. He came home 2 years ago to bury his mother, and he was 35 then. Janet was sorry she'd poured a cup for herself, and she finished it quickly. He put his teacup on the tray. Thanks a million, he said. He picked up his whetstone. I better get to work here. And I better get back upstairs, Janet said. My oldest will be home soon. I'll leave the muffins for you. How old's she? The knife sharpener asked. Six, Janet answered. That's a nice age, he said. She left him to finish, got the clothes out of the dryer, and put the colored load in. Upstairs, she dumped the clothes on the floor and with the kids and began to fold. The back door flew open. Erin ran across the rug and threw herself into the mess of clothes and arms on the floor. I'm home, she said. Boots off, Janet said. How was school this morning? Erin trudged back to the door, kicking off her boots. We did art, she said. Real art. The kids looked at something behind Janet. It was the knife sharpener. Finished, he said. Oh, good, Janet got up from the floor. I'll get my purse. Erin came back into the room. You're not the plumber, she said. No, he answered. I just had tea with your mummy and sharpened some things for her. Janet stood beside him, offering a $10 bill. Is this all right? That's good, missus. Thank you. Erin had come to stand in front of her mother, wrapping Janet's arms around her chest. I was wondering if you'd like to stay and have some lunch with us, Janet said. Just soup. No, he said. I'll be off, thank you. He walked over to the door, turning to wave at the kids as he let himself out. They all admired Erin's schoolwork, her bold triangles and shaky circles. Then Janet went up to put the soup on to heat. She saw the knives on the counter. She was glad she'd had them sharpened. They were overdue. She gathered them up in a bunch and put them into an upper cupboard. They'd have to stay there for a while. The kids wouldn't know how sharp they were until one of them was cut and bleeding. After lunch, Janet stood at the living room window again, watching Erin, admiring the way she swung her book bag. As the child crossed the street, she took a good run at a sheet of ice, skidding across it and tripping up onto the sidewalk. Erin, the name book said, a fair jewel set in a tranquil sea. Janet wondered if hard work and luck would bring her a good old age with her children. She wondered about the places downtown that offered some warmth, some company. Old hotels, there were six or seven of them, close to the bay. She saw him clearly, standing at the corner, his hand outstretched to Erin. Erin gave a little skip, then took his hand. Janet had seen her take her grandfather's hand in that way. They walked together around the corner. She ran back to Mitzi and Daniel in the den. They were watching Mr. Rogers. Don't move, she said. I just have to go out for a minute. She grabbed her coat from the closet and was out the door and halfway down the driveway before she headed on. She ran as hard as she could down to the corner and around it. Nothing. They were gone. There were two lanes midway down the block, one going south, one north, back toward the house. Don't call her name, she told herself. Don't call her name. There are garages, empty yards, shrubs to hide in. She decided on the lane going south. That's where he'd take her. She ran across the street. Her slippers were slapping hard on the icy pavement, loud. She kicked them off and started down the lane in her stockinged feet. She looked in the yards on each side as she ran, looked in every filthy garage window, in every overgrown space between house and fence. She saw Aaron's scarf snagged around the stuccoed corner of a garage 20 yards ahead. She let loose, let everything she had go in her legs. She found Aaron tucked into an evergreen hedge. The knife sharpener was crouched down, talking to her in a gentle old man's voice. Janet pulled her away from him, turning the small face into the front of her coat. The knife sharpener stood up and started to back away from them. "I wouldn't have hurt her, Missus." "Just what the hell would you have done with her, then? Just what the hell do you think?" Janet heard the ugly edge into her voice, and she knew she'd have to stop. Aaron had taken her hand. The knife sharpener was edging back along the wall of the garage. "Please don't call the police," he said. "What choice do I have?" Janet asked. She saw Aaron watching, listening. They turned their backs on him, walking down the lane and out into the street. She found her slippers there, overturned in the snow, and she put them on. Aaron hadn't said anything. "Just keep quiet," Janet told herself. "Let her questions sort themselves out. She'll ask the right one." They were nearly at Kathleen's house. "I shouldn't have gone with him, should I?" Aaron looked down at her boots. "He was a stranger." "No," Janet said, "you shouldn't have. You can know strangers a little bit, but they're still strangers." Aaron kicked at the snow. "I thought he was a friend of yours." Kathleen ran noisily toward them. "Where have you been?" she asked. "My mom's been phoning. We're late. Come on." "Hi," Aaron said calmly, as though nothing had happened to her. She took her friend's hand. "See you later, Mom." "Wait, Kathleen." Janet put her hand on the girl's book bag. "You be sure you don't talk to anyone you don't know, all right?"
"I never do. What's wrong?"
"Just make sure, that's all. I'll talk to your mom this afternoon." Janet watched the two of them go off down the street. Aaron was leaning just slightly into Kathleen's shoulder. She turned back toward the house and, remembering Mitzi and Daniel, began to run again. They were fine. They had all the muffins, some half-eaten, spread out around them on the floor. Mr. Rogers was still on. Janet looked at the screen, at his kind face, at his kind cardigan sweater. She felt her feet stinging from the cold. She went to the living room window with her cigarettes. The snow on the lawns was blue-white in the sun, and the black ice on the street had been covered with a light dusting of snow she hadn't seen fall. She had choices. She could call her husband, who would likely call the police. She could describe the knife sharpener. She could make it so bad for him that he'd never show his face in their world again. Or she could say absolutely nothing to anyone, ever. She could take a calm, liberal stance. She could get in the Toyota, find him, talk to him, listen to him. She could remind him of his own daughter when she was small and trusting on his knee, before she took off with the scum of the earth. Or she could take the gray ceramic ashtray from the coffee table and hurl it across the room at the fireplace, where it would shatter and come to rest in pieces among the ashes.